Conananian.
Remember what cars are for. Transportation, back and forth, A to B, safe, reliable, all right, enjoyable.
I like big cars like the one that's sitting in my grandpa's yard, he say.
The Car Doctor.
I was a mechanic for 40 years, and I'm retired, but I still...
God bless you, Don. You made it out, huh?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I thought I'd kick off this hour with a quick letter, if I can, before I go to the phones. You know, and this sort of ties into my opening comments last hour about how cars are changing and the way we take care of them and the maintenance and do we want to repair them. Hey, Ron, I called a few weeks back regarding my 2008 Dodge Ram 1500. This is from Michael. The Dodge Ram has a 6-speed manual transmission and a grinding issue. I followed your advice and had a clutch put in it and made an appointment at my local transmission shop with a good reputation. This is where the truck is currently sitting. The tech called me on Friday to give me an update. He said that there is internal damage, but the issue he's running into is that he can't find parts anywhere for the Getrag 238. He's been looking for rebuilt units, used units, rebuilt parts, and has had no luck. He is still looking, but told me if he can't find anything, they could swap in a 5-speed NV3500 with minimal modifications. I would much rather be able to keep it a 6-speed. I was wondering if you might have any idea where I could find parts for my Getrag 238. Or a rebuilt unit. If I'm unable to find anything, do you know of a 6-speed transit with better availability that could swap into this truck? Any help you could provide would be appreciated. Thank you, Michael. 2008 Dodge Ram 1500. A couple of things come to mind, Michael, and for everyone else. You know, there's places out there. There's a company called Randy's Ring and Pinion. I don't know what level they follow and do transmission work or have parts available, but their tech support. I recently had an issue where I needed an axle for, if you can believe this, an 04 E150 Ford van that Ford no longer had available. And, you know, why not? They only made, a bazillion of those. And Randy's had sources for remanufacturing through a company called Yukon, and we were able to get one there. And Randy's tech support was excellent in the way that they handled it and part numbers and so on. So they might be able to help you. There is a business called Rockland Standard Gear, Rockland County, New York, that, you know, they've been the manual transmission transfer case differential changeover people for decades. Perhaps they know of something. I do know that the Getrag 238 is difficult to get pieces for. And, you know, that's part of my opening comment here is that I don't think the case of when we decide not to do internal combustion engines matters to us anymore. When the manufacturers turn off the parts supply switch and they go, and that's it, it's over. And that's the really interesting part here is that they're going to do this when they feel like it. Here's a vehicle that's just barely, 15 years old? Not even. 13 years old, and they've decided, well, we're not making parts for it. Maybe they didn't sell enough of them. But, you know, it becomes an issue, and it's probably otherwise a very good truck. Now, my one commentary on the 5-speed versus the 6-speed is, you know, we'd have to apply some math here, look at the gear ratio difference, especially first gear for that between that 5 and 6-speed. I wouldn't get hung up on the fact that you want a 6-speed in it, but I would be more curious what the gear ratios are, what the gear ratio difference is between the two transes, and how that might affect the shift points, fuel economy, horsepower, torque, etc., depending upon what you're doing with this. Is this a tow vehicle, a plow vehicle, pleasure vehicle? All that, you know, does have some bearing. At the worst case scenario, maybe you'd have to change rear differential gears to change the way the transmission reacts to the engine, but that's, you know, that's way down the line. The other thing to keep in mind is it's an 08. It is 15 years old. I can talk to the other way. You know, what sort of shape is the body in? I assume it's good, Michael. I think when we talked, you told me that it was in excellent shape. There's no rust on this vehicle, and it's worth the investment. You know, cars are becoming, it's almost as difficult to decide where you want to go to college as to whether or not you want to fix the older vehicle because they're both very expensive. And, you know, what sort of return on money is there? It seems like there's no more 64 Chevy Impalas that just need a set of points for $3.26. And you could set them with a matchbook on the side of the road. Oh, for the golden days. So, but, you know, that's my best answer for you. Somebody out there must have run into this problem, and I'm sure there's a solution. I would start calling some of these bigger transmission supply houses online on the net, and I think you're going to get some answers. Good luck to you, Michael, and let me know. Keep me posted if you need more. I'll be glad to look deeper into it for you. Let's go over to Sam in Arizona and see what's going on here. 03 Buick LeSabre. And I think we spoke before about this car, did we not, Sam?
Yes, and you said go get some pressure, so I measure the pressures, the fuel pressure.
Okay.
Because I replaced the regulator, and I'm still having hard starts or keeping it going a little bit.
Right.
Not as bad as before. So the pressure came out with key on at 46 PSI. And then when I started with the engine, it was around 47 PSI. So it didn't really go down much.
Right.
And then when I removed the vacuum line, it went up to 54. And I put the vacuum line back in and went back to like 46.
Okay. And then when you turn the engine off, how long does it hold pressure?
It held for at least 10 minutes. It was holding it.
Okay. So it sounds like you don't have a fuel pressure problem.
So I thought you did say it should drop 5 PSA when you start the engine.
Well, so say again, you start the engine and it does what?
It stays at the same PSI. It goes up a little bit, but it comes back down to like 47 or 46.
No, you should see a pressure drop if you've got vacuum going into the diaphragm.
Yeah, and
right.
I didn't.
Right.
But when I took the vacuum off, it went up to 54.
Well, when you take the vacuum off, that is... Well, wait a minute. Hold it. Time. So you woke up to this cold in the morning and just turn the key on. What does the fuel pressure go to?
46, 47.
That's 46?
Yeah.
And if you start it and take the vacuum line off, it goes higher?
Yeah, that means it shut the valve, right?
Right. But when the engine is off, there's no vacuum to the line. How is fuel pressure lower off than it is running? It should be the same.
Well, it was. When I started the engine, it stayed at 46, but I thought you said when I started it at idle, it should drop about 5 PSI, and it did not drop.
It should. It has to.
Yeah.
It has to. You're applying vacuum. You're showing state of change.
Yeah, it didn't. So is that a weak fuel pump, maybe?
Well, why does 46 sound like wrong fuel pressure? Didn't I say key on engine off fuel pressure on this car was 55 to 58?
Yeah, around there, right.
Right. So you're starting off with low pressure.
Yeah.
So,
but it doesn't drop when I start it.
Right. There is something that doesn't make sense here. There is something that doesn't make sense here that I would ask you to go back and verify fuel pressure, key on, engine off. It sounds like you're starting with low pressure.
Right.
Okay. You know, that key on, I'm pretty sure 55 to 56 pounds is key on, engine off. Start it up. It should drop a couple of pounds because vacuum's going to apply.
Right.
And then disconnect the vacuum line and you'll see it come back up. Did you happen to put a vacuum gauge on the supply line? Do you have good vacuum supply?
I put it up by the engine fuel rail port.
Right. Yeah. No. I'm saying, do you have a vacuum gauge? If you take a vacuum gauge and apply it to the vacuum line, you know, you should have manifold vacuum there.
Oh.
Okay. Not that I think that's your issue, but I'm just trying to eliminate everything.
Yeah. All right. But I mean, I can hear it. I put my thumb over that line, and it feels like good vacuum.
Right. There's good vacuum. Okay. Yeah. I think you've got to take a harder look at why you don't have correct fuel pressure, key on, engine off.
Okay.
All right. Now,
okay. Let
me ask you this. If you leave the fuel pressure gauge hooked up and you cycle the key a couple of times and you hear the pump run, does it eventually build higher fuel pressure?
I tried that.
Does it?
No.
It doesn't.
No.
If you cycle,
no, only
it,
if I remove the vacuum.
But the engine's not running.
Yeah, I cycled it a few times and it just got up to like 46, 47. That's about it.
That sounds low. Or that regulator is partially stuck open, and it's bleeding off, peeing off fuel.
Oh, could be, yeah.
All right.
Good point, yeah.
So I am fairly certain you have low fuel pressure to begin with, and that's part of your problem. If you cycle the key a couple of times, Or as you say, if you left the vacuum line off, although I don't see why that's affecting anything, because the engine's not running at that point, does the vehicle start any better?
No, I took the vacuum line off once the engine was running.
All right, now I'm confused. If we walk up to this vehicle with a fuel pressure gauge on it.
Yes.
All right. Key on, engine off. Turn the key on. What does fuel pressure go to?
46, 47.
Okay, when you start it, what does the fuel pressure go to?
It goes up a little bit, then hits 47 at idle.
Okay, that's a problem.
Yeah, but then while it's running at idle, I take the vacuum off and it goes up to 54.
Yeah, it doesn't make that. Well, yeah, that makes sense, but it still sounds low.
Right.
It sounds like you're 10 pounds off, so either you've got an incorrect reading fuel pressure gauge that's out of calibration.
Uh-huh.
All right, and this is the one you rented, or did you buy
it? Yeah, it's actually brand new from O'Reilly.
Okay. So, you know, I would put it on a different vehicle. Find something. What, has it got a Schrader valve style setup, just like the Buick?
Yeah.
You got another vehicle in the house?
Yeah, an S10 truck.
Yeah, can you just screw it onto that and see what the fuel pressure is?
Yeah.
All right.
Calibrate.
Maybe the gauge is off by 10 pounds.
Yeah, and if it's not, it could be a weak fuel pump.
Yeah, could. But before we do that, let's make sure the equipment we're using
is,
let's see it. You know, whatever it is, the S10, and then just go look up fuel pressure for that. And if that's off, then you can't have two vehicles that are off, especially if the S10 is working correctly. Remember this, everything you do, you're testing new tools on problem vehicles.
Right.
Okay. And that'll lead you down the garden path. You'll be pulling your hair out. Do that. I bet you've got a fuel pressure gauge that's off by 10 pounds, and that would make the most sense here.
Okay.
All right.
Try that.
Call me back. You let me know.
Sure.
All right, sir.
Thanks.
You be well. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
Whether it's a little red Corvette or a Yugo, you've come to the right place to get that car fixed. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Jerry in Arizona. I think we had a technical problem with Jerry's phone call last week. I'm glad you called back, Jerry. So let's start over from the beginning. Let's tell the listenership what kind of vehicle you've got and what sort of problem you were having. Jerry? Uh-oh. Jerry? I mean, something's wrong with Jerry in Arizona. I don't know. The phone calls just seem to be dropping off. Is Jerry there? I'm not really sure. Let's try that again. So while Tom's doing that, I want to make another comment. We were talking in a previous show about this $9,500 internal combustion engine car buyback program that's going on in California. I've been reading it in between the breaks here doing the show today. So it turns out that some very specific things that California has done. But the $9,500 per car, in case you're just catching up, in California, if you want to turn in your internal combustion engine vehicle and it meets the year model requirements and you're in the right zip code and so forth, you can get up to $9,500 trade-in value. It's kind of like a cash for clunkers, but just for gas-powered vehicles. Well, somewhere along the way, California created an $8.3 million pot fund of state funding to where this $9,500 is going to come from. And where does that money come from? I don't understand that. That's just like, wow. But in any event, if you live in California and you want to trade in your gas car and you don't want to drive it anymore and it's the right year, age, and group, you can get $9,500 for it. And that's cash money out of pocket. And you can take it and go buy a new vehicle with that. So they are just going to try and speed things up and get rid of the internal combustion engine vehicles. And I guess in the usual, I'm going to pick on California a minute, everybody else does, in the usual mode of California insanity, either they're not telling us how they're going to come up with electricity to meet the demand, or they just don't care. Maybe they think that if we put the cart before the horse will learn how to push it. I don't think so. And I really would love to hear from some of our California listeners. If anybody, maybe California's like this other country where they just don't let the information filter out correctly and they explain things to us, because it just seems like some of the things that they say don't make sense. I'm looking up on our Facebook page, by the way, if you want, you can stream the show up on Facebook. Our friend Steve Etheridge left me a note. He said, "Hey, Ron, just want to mention that gas-powered gasoline small engines have now been banned in California, courtesy of Governor Newsom." And I read that this week. And, you know, so now we're going to get rid of all gasoline. I think, and Steve, I saw that, and I think that was by 2025 or 2026. And you're now going to force all the landscapers to go out and get rid of all their old equipment and buy new. And who's going to pay for that? You know, it's going to get to be very expensive to have your lawn clipped and cut in California, and probably pretty soon everywhere in the country at the rate we're going, because it has to make sense. I don't know. I question, you know, it all. Yeah, Tom.
We were talking before the show about, I told you I read something where someone was talking about all the ships in port in California, and what the problem was, he had said, was that California had banned owner-operator truck drivers. And I looked it up. That's not quite exactly 100% true. What California did was they changed the law that defines a contractor and ties it into the lease for the owner-operator truck. So technically, if you have an owner-operator, if you're an owner-operator and you're leasing a vehicle, you're no longer considered a private contractor and you have to be working for a company.
So, and I realize we're off the topic of cars here, but does that answer my question? Because, I've got a real problem at the shop. I can't buy, this is what I have problems buying this week, besides, I don't want to just say everything. 0-20 oil is becoming scarce. 5-30 oil is becoming scarce. Brake pads. There's a car out there called a Honda Accord. Have you ever heard of one of those, Tom? They're sort of...
I've seen just a couple on the road driving around.
Yeah. 2008 and newer. Can't buy brake pads. Can't buy pads and rotors for those. We're seeing issues with air filters, oil filters, cabin filters. And I think at the rate we're going, we're going to be out of stuff. It's going to be a very quiet winter because nobody's going to be able to fix anything. Nobody's going to have any parts. And so from an automobile perspective, I keep saying to myself, and I've seen the pictures of the ships. My friend, the parts manager, the wholesale manager for the local Chrysler dealer, Rockland Chrysler Jeep, Kevin was telling me his brother-in-law or his brother lives off the coast of Long Branch, or lives on the coast of Long Branch, California. And he's got pictures. I'm waiting for the video of all these ships that are sitting out in the harbor that just can't be unloaded. And I'm saying to myself, why aren't we activating, I don't know, am I wrong? Why aren't we activating the National Guard? Wouldn't that be a requirement? You know, I said years ago in another form and incarnation of this radio show, I said, and people laughed at me, and I'm not looking for a pat on the back, but auto repair and automobile parts are a matter of national security. They are. We can't fix cars. We can't get anywhere. We can't move trucks. We can't move material. We're done. Somebody's got to wake up. Somebody's got to turn the light switch on and say, hey, let's get these ships unloaded and move things along. So, but, you know, listen, when I come back, we'll talk more about cars. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Don't go away. I'll be back right after this. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, at 855-560-9900. That phone number is 24-7, by the way. If you call and we're not on the air, we're live Saturday afternoons, East Coast time, 2 to 4 p.m. You can call the aforementioned 855-560-9900. Leave a message. Executive producer Tom Ray will call you back and put you in the queue for the next live broadcast. Let's go over to Gary in Ohio, 03RAV4, and some questions about an older vehicle. Gary, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Good.
I'm actually a newcomer. I just started listening to you guys last week, and I was really interested in it. And I'm like, wow! So I thought I'd call in and.
Well, glad to have you, Gary.
See if there's anything I can look for.
Absolutely. What can I help you with today?
All right. Like I said, my sister gave me her car, which is a 2003 Toyota RAV4.
Okay.
In excellent condition. Body's great. Underneath is great. Engine's good. Oil changes. Is there anything I should be looking for as far as...
How many miles on it?
147.
Just broken in. So, you know, four-cylinder or six-cylinder?
It is a four, I believe.
Yeah, usually they are. The sixes were rare. So, you know, my first question is a RAV4 of this generation and age, do you know if it has any sort of oil consumption issues?
Nothing.
Okay.
Not one bit.
Okay. So that means your sister really did do the oil changes on time. These engines, these engines ran a good long time. It's when you started to go for that longer than 5,000-mile oil change interval. Usually by now the rings were gummed up and sticky, and you started to have oil consumption issues. So that's good. That's good. She did.
She was faithful. 3,000 miles, and I've changed it twice since I've had it.
Okay.
I put new bulbs in it. I did a lot of stuff to it, but
How do you keep it going longer? Right.
Mild weather.
Yeah.
Huh?
How do you keep it going longer?
Right.
Right. So,
or what should I look for?
Okay. So, you know, did she, and some of this is a moot point, but just to show you the line of thinking, 60, 90, 120,000 miles were the major services in the latter part of this vehicle's life. I'm sure she did those, probably at the dealer, I'm guessing.
That I would have to find out. I don't really know.
Okay.
I'm sure she did.
So, you know, it's all about fluids. When was the last time coolant was serviced? When was the last time trans fluid was serviced? When was the last time the rear... This is an all-wheel drive vehicle?
No, front.
Just a front, okay. I believe there is a separate final drive in this. When was the last time the front differential, if it's separate, was changed from the trans fluid?
Actually,
so, go ahead.
Before, she gave it to me in April. So right before she brought it from Florida to me, she had the radiator flushed and pressurized, oil change. Now, as far as the differential, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, the diff on this, the final drive on the front-wheel drive version of this, sometimes they'll have a separate fill and sometimes they won't. So that's just something for you to investigate. If there's a separate fill and drain plug, that normally doesn't get serviced when you would just drain or change trans fluid. It's a separate drain and fill, so look into that. It's likely trans fluid, but it's usually a separate drain and fill, all right? And I want to just err on the side of caution and say just look at it. You'll know right away. When was the last time? Go ahead.
I can't find the transmission dipstick.
Oh, it's there. It's probably black up close to the front of the radiator that probably comes up close to the fan shroud. On the right side.
Okay, I'll look for it then.
Okay. Or it's more towards the back, closer to the master cylinder, heading in that direction. All right?
Okay.
Last time, spark plugs, air filter, cabin filter, if it's equipped, any of that done any time in recent history? Okay.
Was just two.
Original radiator?
Yes.
All right. So it was a Florida car, so it probably won't have the issue I'm going to describe. But a lot of them that lived in the Rust Belt states, the Northeast, the Northwest, and areas where there's heavy snow, by now the cooler lines that come off the radiator for the transmission oil cooler lines, the nuts that physically hold them to the body of the radiator have started to rust and begin to disintegrate. So, you know, it's a Florida car, probably not applicable, but take a look. You'll have to get it up in the air or get underneath it where the trans oil cooler lines come from, and you'll see what sort of shape the copper tubes are in or the steel tubes are in. Are the nuts themselves starting to corrode and rot away? And if they are, you do it early. Are you going to travel far with it, Gary?
No, it's no, I barely, you know, I drive it, but since April, I've only put 6,000 miles on it.
Okay, so you're never really far from the house with it.
No. Huh?
All right. The only, you know, the one thing I would be concerned about is if you're going to start driving distances, long stretches of highway. It went through almost 18 years of Florida heat. And I would be concerned about the plastic radiator. You know, you could take a look at the radiator itself where the upper radiator hose comes in. Usually, if the plastic is starting to, my term is dry out, you'll actually see a change in the color of the plastic where it develops a little bit of a lighter area, sometimes even a whiter yellowish look to the neck. That's the, you know, the way I describe it and the way I think about it in my head is there's a certain amount of oil in plastic, and the oil is starting to dry out and the plastic's becoming brittle. And even though the radiator is working now, at what point do we want to worry about the failure? But if you're close to home, it's not necessarily something you have to do right this moment. All right.
I would like to add one thing if I could.
Sure.
Before she brought it to me, she took it to a mechanic. And the mechanic actually told her that she would be crazy to get rid of it. Because he didn't really find anything wrong with it.
Yeah. There probably isn't. Listen, and everything we're talking about is voluntary. From the sounds of it, it's a great vehicle. Everything we're talking about are some of the typical things I see as they age. So, you know, it sounds like it's a good one. And then the last thing I would just mention is, are you using any sort of fuel system treatment on it? Are you doing any sort of, have you done any sort of fuel system cleaning or maintenance?
I did a fuel system cleaning, which is after my first 3,000 miles, I ran the tank, you know, put the what do you call it? I don't know what kind I put in it, but it was the high mileage fuel system cleaner.
Okay.
And I haven't did it again. Should I do it again?
Well, keep in mind a tank additive. A tank additive is like a maintenance, all right? An actual fuel system cleaning is hooking up a cleaner of a solution to the fuel rail and either cleaning through the rail or cleaning through the induction system with a much higher detergent combination of chemical. So what you pour in the tank, and I'm not going to say that these numbers are exact, what you pour in the tank is a diluted down version of the detergent product that's run through the injectors or through the induction system when you do a formal fuel system cleaning. What you've done is just fuel system maintenance, just adding a bottle of fuel system cleaner to the tank, you know, at a specified mileage mark. All right.
Okay.
So good maintenance, but the real difference will come after a fuel system cleaning if this engine has carbon deposit issues. Do you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts near you? Or can you jump on?
Yes, I do. Right.
Okay. Go down to your O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tell them you're interested in doing a fuel system cleaning in the driveway. All right. Maybe they've a fuel system cleaning in the driveway. They should have from a company called Berryman, Berryman. Berryman. They should have Berryman's 4-step fuel system cleaning kit in stock. All right. And you can read the directions on the box. It's something really easy that you can do in the driveway. Just follow the manufacturer's directions. And that also has a tank additive in it. I believe it has throttle body cleaning capability in it. And then, you know, fuel system cleaning the rail, cleaning the injectors, or if you're going in through induction, cleaning the induction system. So talk to the guys at the local O'Reilly Auto Parts. They'll be able to help steer you in a direction. Fuel system cleaning at a better level than what you're doing would help that vehicle as well. Enjoy your car, Gary. I enjoyed the call. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. We are back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the name of the Car Doctor. I was sitting here during the break thinking about, you know, what do I want to come back and tell you? What story, what real life event from the shop do I want to relay as we kind of wind things down this hour? And I think it's this one. We have a woman customer by the name of Tina. She drives an older Honda. And Tina's a little bit of a nervous wreck. And I keep telling her that she's got to, like, you know, take a chill pill. You got to relax. It's only a car. We'll figure it out. You know, it can't all be such high drama and high maintenance. It's just a car. And she had this problem where she had this intermittent no crank, no start condition that I could never see. I could never duplicate. And it became a case of, I don't know if she lost faith in us or she was just looking for an immediate answer because she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And she made the fatal mistake, because there's not a lot that will make me turn you down, but when you say, well, maybe the dealer can fix it, and that's when Ron goes, you know, if this is dating, it's time to let you go on and see the universe. So Tina went to the dealer. I never got more phone calls from this woman in my life in the course of 3 days over the time span that the dealer had this car as they attempted to fix it. And they claimed they were able to duplicate the condition of the no crank, and they put a starter in it, and I believe it's fixed, so it was either a lucky guess or they were able to fix it, you know, as a result. But the point became, along the way, the triage and damage that they did by telling her the 90 things, well, 90 is an exaggeration, the 9 things that this vehicle needed in terms of repair, and it needed another $4,800 worth of service and maintenance and oil leaks and noisy struts. And I've been working on the car 4 years. It's very reasonable for an 08 Honda CRV. It's not a terrible vehicle. It's just getting older and a little clunky. But from a what-can-the-customer-afford practical point of view, it's fine. But it was when she picked it up, the one that I still think about, she picked it up and the check engine light was on, and she called me right away in panic and tears, and she said, you know, I feel so guilty calling you because I feel like I've been out on a date with somebody else, and now I'm calling you and asking you for advice. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, the check engine light's on. I said, go back. I said, they left something disconnected. They did something wrong. It's their issue. It wasn't like that when it went in, right? She said, no. I said, go back. Well, they had closed by then, so she went back the next morning and sat there for an hour, only to find out that when they looked at it, they knocked the knock sensor. The knock sensor is part of the fuel system, the emission controls, right next to the starter. They knocked the connector off for the knock sensor and just left it hanging. So they plugged it back on, somehow tried to convince her, as she put it, that it was her fault. They wanted the charger, but didn't. She ended up making enough of a fuss. And when she called me up and I said, what'd you learn this week? She said, always be true to the one that you trust and not necessarily believe the next person. The grass is always greener. I said, yeah, it's a lot like dating, isn't it? She said, yeah. She goes, auto repair and dating sure do seem like a lot alike. I said, yep, they sure do. So I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. You know, another person's perspective. And that's what I mean for you. You know, when you walk into your mechanic, and I don't know, what are you looking for? Why are you here? Why are you even listening to the show? What is it you expect me to tell you every week? It can't just be to hear me rattle off things on how to fix a car. Because auto repair is a very personal experience. To me, in my mind, it's, you know, it's your safety. It's your family's safety. It's those around you. That's at least a 2-ton missile going down the road at 50 miles an hour. And everything on it has to be just right. My wife got into an accident this week because she was traveling on the parkway and the person next to her swerved to avoid a tire that had come unscrewed from a vehicle and came flying across the road. The person swerved to the right to avoid her. Her side view mirror hit the Explorer, scratched up the door, $1,200 worth, and we'll get it fixed. But my wife's okay. And, you know, that's a 2-ton missile going down the road. And if something falls off it, somebody's going to get hurt or maybe worse. So just, what kind of auto repair experience are you having, and what kind of auto repair experience do you want to have? 855-560-9900. Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor, coming back to wrap it up right after this. Don't go away.
First gear, it's all fast and fast. Second gear, a lean fast and fast. Third gear, hang on tight. Faster. It's all right. It's not a big...
Welcome back, Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor. I want to challenge some of my older audience. If you're 65 to 70 years old and you've got a project car, you know, or a collection of project cars, or you've got that engine that, well, I'm going to get around to rebuilding it one of these days, I'm going to just remind you in a not doom and gloom kind of way, you're 65, 70 years old. If you want to enjoy it, what are you waiting for? You know, it was a glorious time, the 60s and the 70s, with muscle cars and hot rods, and it's getting older and further away every year that goes by. And the availability of resources and parts and materials and knowledge and tooling, it goes further away every year that goes by. I was out on YouTube this week, and what kind of triggered this in my head is I saw, if you want to see something neat, go to YouTube and just type in 67 Corvette L88. It's like a time machine. It's a land that we've all forgotten. When you clicked L88 as the RPO option box at the dealership and you bought this behemoth of a vehicle that was so fast and so furious and so powerful, and they just sold them over the counter. By the way, one of them sold at Mecum recently for $3.5 million. There's a good investment. $5,000 to buy the car, $3.5 million 50 years later. Show me where that pays off in the stock market. But if you've got a project car, get it done. Go for a ride. Gasoline will be short someday, and we want to enjoy them while we can. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.